Welcome to the Sensory Project Show with Rachel and Jessica. We're here to share all things sensory, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and overall health and wellness from a therapist's perspective, providing raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for parents and families to implement into daily life. Thank you so much for joining us. Today's episode is sponsored by Harkla, a company that makes high-quality products for everyday use. This includes sensory and therapy equipment and products as well as supplements. The owners, Casey and Amelia, are local to Boise, which make this even cooler for us since they're local to us.
Harkla is a company on a mission. They donate 1% of each month's sales to the University of Washington Autism Center, which funds cutting-edge research and sponsors scholarships for children with autism to attend a summer camp.
Stay tuned to hear more later in the episode, as well as to get a special discount.
Okay, let's get started.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 132 of the Sensory Project Show. This is Rachel and Jessica.
And we're so excited to be talking with Mackenzie from Playing at Your Plate on Instagram. We got a chance to have a really good conversation with her all about picky eating and the way that we talk about food and some other great things.
Yes, she has so much knowledge to share with you guys. We are just going to jump into it and get started. Hi, Mackenzie. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good.
Great.
So good. So we're really excited to chat with you and hear all the things that you're going to tell us. But first, we're going to ask you our five secret questions. So okay. We know all of your secrets.
All of your deepest, darkest secrets.
Yes.
Okay. All right. First one, would you rather sing or tell jokes in front of a large audience?
Ooh, I have definitely sung before, but I think I'd actually rather tell a joke because it makes me super nervous.
I love it.
Been a while.
Are you a singer?
I was. I have not done it since probably like high school, but I was for a period of my life. But because it made me so nervous, no. Didn't stick with it, so. But I do like to sing, just in the comfort of my own home.
Mm-hmm. I love
it. And now with my children, I will sing with kids and therapy and stuff. I will do that.
You can be weird and crazy and silly in front of kids, and they aren't going to judge you at all.
Yep.
There you go.
That's my best singing environment.
Okay, so you have two kiddos, correct?
I do, yeah. I have an almost 5-year-old and a 2.5-year-old.
Perfect. So this next question is about them. Which child is your favorite?
Oh my gosh, that's such a
good question. That's her. That is all Jessica because she's an only child.
I love that.
I would never give you a favorite ever.
Oh, it's no. Almost like a trick.
Well, them are my favorite. Has anybody given you an answer?
More of like a, well, I love them all, but some days this one's my favorite.
There, I will say that my daughter is definitely sweeter than my son, but he's been around longer, but I think that's a girl boy thing, but I'm not positive, but I feel like she came out just like very sweet, but now she is crossed over. It took about 2.5 years, but she is now on his level.
Yeah.
And now they're both kind of crazy.
Good. All right.
Okay. What is your favorite form of exercise?
I love to run. I do run. I actually listen to all my podcasts when I'm running. So there you go.
What is your favorite family tradition?
Ooh, favorite family tradition. We aren't super like every time we have to do this. I think just general fun experiences and making new traditions and experiences are probably my favorite, which is a weird answer, but I love to make new experiences with food and do all that kind of stuff all the time. So that would definitely be my pull. Like anything cooking related or fun family related would be good. So
that's a good one. I like it.
Yeah. I'm not distinct anything. I feel like I'm very all across the board on almost everything. Balance.
About creating experiences a lot, and you know, I think it's just very important. So I can relate with that. I think that's super special. Okay, our last question and most favorite question: what is your sensory quirk?
Ooh, my sensory quirk. I have a lot of energy. I need a lot of input. That is probably me. I love chewy things, probably. I teach a lot of people to chew, probably because I need it. But yeah, that would probably be mine. Chewy candy.
There you go. Are you a gum chewer too?
I am, but I don't need to. I kind of like weaned myself off of gum while I was pregnant for a while, just because it's probably a really stupid thing. I was like, oh, there's like aspartame in gum. I don't want to do it. I was trying to be whatever. So I didn't chew it for a super long time, which is probably really ridiculous, but I just started chewing it again recently. And it's the first time I chewed gum in a long time, but.
All right. So tell us who you are, what you do, why you do it, how you do it, all the things.
Okay, well, I am a speech pathologist, but ever since my internships in grad school long ago, I have done feeding therapy. I kind of randomly got thrown into it during my internships, and I've been doing it ever since. I took my first job at a private practice who didn't have any feeding therapy. I was like, are you sure you don't have feeding therapy? It's really my passion and what I've decided that I wanted to do in the last few months. And she's like, whatever, like, if you think it's a good idea, go for it. So I spent the beginning part of my career kind of developing a feeding program and trying to figure all the things out. And that business grew and took off. So we had tons of feeding people. I started training feeding therapists. And now I work in a pediatric outpatient clinic within our children's hospital and work with medically complex kids and do a lot of transitioning from when they leave the NICU all the way till when they're starting solids, working on G-tube and NG-tubes, getting rid of them and weaning from them, and just developing positive experiences with food and getting their sensory system and bodies and all things that go into feeding ready from the NICU to starting solids or moving forward with foods, I suppose. Yeah, I also do the Instagram thing with my daughter. I kind of started that as well. All my friends always ask, teach me this or show me how to do this or which part is starting solids. So I started the account when she was a baby. I kind of meant to do it with my son, but never really did. And it's taken off from there. And my job is kind of always reinforcing those things because I'm doing starting solids and bottling there and at home. And so now just consuming my life in all the best ways.
I'm curious, when you first were getting started, did you take any courses on feeding that you loved?
I did. The first course I took was the SOS approach, which I did love. And then I always say that I was kind of trained by OTs and PTs because I was the only person that did feeding. So none of the SLPs really did feeding. So the OTs kind of taught me a lot. So I do have a lot of OT principles in my pocket and I use those a lot. And that's kind of the basis of all my learning came from OTs. And I always lean on them and ask them, well, what about this? Or what's this? Or teach me this about your sensory system, because it made so much sense when I was doing all my feeding kids. The private practice was mostly kids on the spectrum and it worked so well with them, but there was that definite sensory component for everyone. So I really dug into that and just needed to know all the answers. And interestingly enough, my job now at the Children's Hospital is more of like a PT focused. So they don't have as many OTs, but they have a lot of PTs working with, you know, the babies. So I feel like the babies do a lot more of PT and the torticollis and that kind of thing, and the whole body being in alignment and breathing and respiratory for the babies for feeding. So it's been an interesting kind of mesh of professionals.
Yeah.
But yes, SOS was the first one that I took.
Okay. It makes a difference when the different professions work together as a team, because not one of us knows all the answers. And when we do come together and the child's positioned in the right way and they're sitting up straight and
their sensory needs are met,
yes, then everything's more successful. And I think that's one of the most important takeaways is, you know, that multidisciplinary approach, that team approach is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it shows, especially with feeding for sure all the time. So yes. Yeah.
Okay. So I wanted to talk about one of your recent Instagram posts that I read it and I was like, oh, that's so good. So you said that the way you talk about food becomes your child's inner voice when trying it. So I want to know where that came from.
Yes, absolutely. In my first job, I suppose, working with the kiddos on the spectrum, I noticed that a lot of my older kids always put negative connotations to foods. It was always very negative. Their first thought would always be like, yuck, gross, stinky, smelly, disgusting, all these bad negative names for them. So we would always work a lot on factual language and what's positive. Tell me the facts, tell me what you know, and grow from there. So I wanted to really make people aware of it from a young age. Working in earlier intervention now, it's so important to start those early, because really the way you talk to the food, talk about the food, the experiences with you that you have, all those things are so important, and the kids are just taking them in and soaking it up. And if you're not giving them those experiences, I feel like the child, especially the sensory child who's feeling those so much more, is just like soaking in all that negative. You know, they're left to say, sticky, ew, wet, gross, my hands are wet, I'm freaking out. They're in this negative state. Whereas if you can talk them through it and give them factual language, or, oh, I love this food because of da da da, while they're trying it, then they're being flooded with positives versus negatives. So yeah. I feel like it is a super important tip.
When you say factual language, do you mean like just talking about what the food looks like or feels like? Or
I think all the things, like the sensory properties of food for sure. But also just actual things that you know about it. Like it grows on a tree and it is round and it is glossy and it is wet inside. If I grab an apple, I need to know, like from the outside, it looks red and dry, but in the inside, it's going to have seeds and it's going to be wet and it's going to splatter at you and it's going to be a different color and all those things. Facts for sure, but then also the fact that it grows on the tree is very interesting, and the fact that you can go to an apple orchard and pick them. You need to kind of have like this whole rounded view of the food. Okay. So I know everything about the food, so now I have all these interesting facts coming through my head versus the negative.
Okay. So they can just have that dialogue, that inner dialogue about the food, not necessarily inner, but initially you would have that conversation, that dialogue with them about the food, teaching them about it, so that way they can draw their own conclusions whether they like it or not.
Yes, because then I feel like in that kiddo that I talk to that's 14 that tells me gross, yucky, stinky, they can start saying, I don't like that it is wet, but I'm okay with the fact that it's spicy. So how can we decrease the wetness and increase the spice and focus on that? Can we dry it off? Or could we convince our brain that we love the spicy, so the wet part becomes a little bit less necessary? So I feel like it's super important in the early age, because then as their language develops, they are able to make more sense of it. And then they can verbally tell you, I don't like this about it, but I do like this, which is super awesome. Plus I'm an SLP, so language is great, you know, so I love the language building and categorizing and all of those things too. So it comes together well.
That's helpful.
Yeah, I like it.
I want to talk about picky eaters, but before we ask you all of the things that we want to know about, are your kids picky eaters?
My kids are not really picky eaters. When I started my account two and a half years ago, my daughter would eat anything working through like a baby led weaning type approach. But my son, I started videotaping him too to kind of get the whole vision in there, you know, and what we're doing, what's going on in my house. And I was like, oh, you know what? You know, we kind of got stuck in that. Let's have this for dinner and this is easy and we all like this, so that's easy and let's kind of go there. And his cousins would eat certain things and the other kids, you know, and I was like, you know what? You should be less picky than this. We should not be having these issues. It's my kid here. Like, this is my whole thing. I'm doing all this. I need to like show you. So then I started working on it with him. And actually 3 years later, he's just the other day, like a week ago, he was sitting down at the dinner table like, oh man, mom, you have to try this. This rice dad made is like so good. It's amazing. But he's never really like said stuff like that before. So I think that's a really good take home point too, that my child that was borderline picky, he was not terrible. So I don't want to make that confusing or anything, but he now has like a genuine appreciation for food and will eat pretty much anything set out in front of him. He'll at least try it and have an experience with it and work through it. But it took 2.5 years. And I think that's super telling, because that's a really long time. And that's somebody who's had positive feeding experiences, you know, throughout life. So I did find that to be an interesting finding, but
Yeah, and it's also, you're a feeding therapist and it still took years, you know? So it's like, nothing happens overnight, no matter how skilled you are, or no matter what tools you have in your back pocket. So that consistency component is really important.
Absolutely. And kids are picky. Like, they are designed to be picky. They are finding things in toddlers and all the things where they actually are picky for good reasons and selective. And I think that's really interesting, but also super true. And we as parents sometimes kind of accidentally facilitate some of those things. Mm-hmm. I was just working with a person right before this, and we were talking about just, did you make a mess? Did you do this? How much have you been working? And she's like, oh, you know, I could have probably done this and this and gotten there faster, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, so then going along with that, do you think there is specific things that cause picky eating?
I think that there are things that we do unintentionally based on the world we live in and all the things. There's the kid food for kids' meals and people. I mean, even my daycare now still serves very standard kid foods, which I wish they wouldn't. I'm about to go all in on that, but it's just so common, so many places. Everywhere I go, I notice it, and it's just really in your face of this is what kids eat and this is what they're supposed to eat. And I see why parents would say, oh, that's not weird that my kid only eats chicken nuggets and french fries, because I feel like kids are supposed to eat chicken nuggets and french fries. That's really like normal. Like, that's what all their friends do. So I think that can contribute to it. It's just that thought of, well, I'll keep offering this because I know you like it. Sorry, I was kind of losing my train of thought earlier, but so I feel like if you keep offering a food and your child keeps saying no to it, then you're going to stop offering it. But what you should really be doing is continuing to offer it and continuing to expose. And I feel like people get thrown off by that and discouraged by that, which it's totally easy to.
So going along with that, it is interesting idea of like what we offer our kids. And when my son was like 2 or 3 years old, I read this article about how kids in America eat so differently than kids in other countries, and how, you know, kids in America typically don't like spicy foods. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, spicy foods aren't meant for kids, but actually it's just what they're exposed to. Whereas kids in, you know, India are exposed to a much more diverse palette of food, or, you know, variety of flavors, and how those kids will just sit there and eat all these different flavors of foods and spiciness of foods, and that's their normal. But here it's like, oh, kids don't like spicy foods. But it's not true. It's just what they're exposed to.
Absolutely. And I use that for all the babies that go through my program or that I talk to. I tell them how important that is, especially the NICU babies who have different sensory systems and all the things. I always say, overexpose, give them anything. They often need way bigger flavors and way bigger textures and all that kind of stuff too. So it's very beneficial to serve them different things. And I encourage parents to go out of their comfort zone sometimes too and say, what are you eating all the time? Like, maybe we could try to expand your diet.
Totally. That's me. Yeah. I know. I always I have never liked pickles. And I work with kids, you know, I do a little bit of feeding with kids, and we always say you got to try a food 20 times before you can let us know if you like it or don't like it. And my husband was like, Rachel, you need to like pickles. I'm like, all right, we'll try this. I'll try it out. I'll try pickles 20 times. And now I like pickles. So it's like, good for me for going out of my comfort zone.
Right. I ate a pickle last night. I hate pickles, but I have convinced myself to like pickles. My kids wanted to try them like 3 weeks ago or something. My husband loves them, and my daughter was into it. And then my son was kind of like, oh, I want to try pickles. And he's like, Mom, are you going to try pickles? And my husband's like, she doesn't like pickles. And I'm like, I'm going to try the pickle. Like, you know what? The pickle tastes pretty good with the burger. I can get there.
There you go.
So I feel you. I hear you.
Your husband totally put you in a box right there.
I love it. I love when people do that. They do it during my sessions all the time. And they'll be like, yeah, Mom, are you going to try it? And I'll be like, do it.
Yes. I love it.
So good. So good to go out of the comfort zone. And it's okay if you end up not liking it, or if you don't like a food. I think letting kids know and adults know, like, they don't have to like everything. Mm-hmm. They just have to be open to trying it, you know, and that's key.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that self-talk is a big factor too, for sure. Like, we can talk ourselves into it because we know all the good reasons, and that makes it so much easier to be able to do it and process that. So giving kids those similar tools and looking what you use and how you can help them is really important too.
Yeah. Well, and kids do what we do, right? So if they see us eating the same thing all the time, they're going to do it too.
For sure.
So do you think that picky eating can just be a phase, or do you think that kids can and should grow out of it?
I think both. I think that picky eating does go in phases, especially in that one-year-old brain and tug. Basically, one through four or five is a picky eating phase by nature. But if you're flooding them with these experiences, it's also the time that they need to build those experiences. And like I said with my son, it took 2.5 years. So that is definitely a process, and it can be changed, but it takes a lot of work. But what I always tell families is you're putting in the hard work now to avoid a lifelong challenge, because it's a lifelong experience. Everybody eats food still. You're going to eat food the rest of your life. And as you get older, or, you know, just as you grow, you're going to experience foods differently, and they're going to be so positive. You're going to have more experiences with friends and family and different, you know, events where you have these foods. So it becomes worth it.
Totally.
Food is very social, you know, and you for want sure. to have those positive experiences with it. You know, you think about adults who are challenging, or you think about adults who are struggling with the sensory world, and they go to a party and there's all of these foods that they don't like. And, you know, maybe they're on a date or whatnot, and they're like, oh, I don't like that food. Or, oh, no, I'm not going to eat that. We need to go somewhere else. Like, it will totally impact them on a social level. We don't want that
to happen. For sure. For sure. And a lot of restaurants now, I feel like, are coming out with more foodie type menus where they have different combinations and different things and charcuterie boards and all of these things where you have this big environment to try all these new foods. And if you can't work yourself through that, you are missing out on the fun. That is part of the reason you go out to dinner. So that is some big stuff.
Definitely. And I'm thinking about it. Last night I had tacos. And it was like black beans and butternut squash and like zucchini on top. And I told Daniel, and he's like, you got what? I'm like, it was good.
I just
right? squash. He's like,
oh no, I need to be eating therapy.
I know.
I went and got tacos this last weekend, and it's at this restaurant that we have in downtown Boise called the Funky Taco, and they're constantly changing their menu, but their tacos are different all the time, and it's not something you would normally make at home. Have you been there?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah.
That'd be so fun to like take your kid to and show them how you're trying the flavor and have them try something else. You know, like that's so important to for them to watch you.
Yeah, totally.
And the fact that they change their menu, you can't get the same thing, same safe thing every time. Yes. That's what I do. I go to the restaurant and I get a Caesar salad every time. It's safe and I know I'm going to like it.
Yeah, fair.
Totally true.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, how can we facilitate that growth, or how, I mean, in a nutshell, how can you transition away from picky eating, kind of like what you did with your son? Mm-hmm.
I would say positive experiences. It's all the self-talk. Those positive experiences are so key. Whenever we're going to have a new food for dinner, say, I will pick my kids up from daycare and I'll tell them about what we're going to have, and I'll prep them and I'll say, this is what we're having for dinner. Let me tell you why I'm super excited about it. So I have the excitement. I'm actually building up this exciting time called dinner because I know I have to. If I put it on the table and they're tired from daycare and they sit down and if it was not expected, they're going to get upset. Mm-hmm. So I prep them and I tell them about the time that I had it last and how exciting it was and what my favorite sides are with it and how it's going to taste. And remember this time when we went here and we had this, or we had something similar, and we kind of hash all that out. So by the time they're at the table, they already have all this good dialogue in their brains and they're ready for it. And now they're kind of excited, which already creates a positive memory. And then they usually try it and we have fun. We're kind of silly when we play with it and we eat it and all is well. And if they don't, you know, I have to be ready for that too. And I think that's kind of important too, because if you did try all these things and then it fails, then you get stressed or upset, but you got to kind of, it's fine. I'm going to keep enjoying mine. And now I'm modeling it for you. And here we go, and continue positive experiences and decrease the negative.
Do you let them like touch their food and play with their food at the dinner table if they're uncomfortable with it?
Absolutely. We always play with our food, and they actually initiate it more than I do, obviously playing with your plate, but for sure we always do. They always come up to me playing with different things and having fun ways to play. And I learn from them all the time, which you should with kids, their imagination's better.
So if you're in the car and you start talking about what you guys are having for dinner and one of your kiddos is like, ew, that's gross, I'm not going to eat that, what's your response?
They for sure do that often, or they'll say like, oh, that sounds gross or whatever. But, you know, I'm just in my own little world. Oh, I'm so excited. Don't listen to him. He's not. Let me tell you about why, or remember this time, or what about this? Or I'll change the subject for a while, and then right before we'll go back on it. You know, sometimes they're just going to be like that just because they are. But if you kind of like leave, just don't put too much of your emotion into it, I would say, and then you're probably okay. Take a break from it and come back, and they'll usually actually bring it back into the conversation, like, well, what about this? You know, because I was talking about it, and then we'll keep going with the conversation.
Okay. So kind of just play it off if they're making a negative comment, almost like ignore it initially and then come
back. I would almost kind of ignore it. Yeah, I don't know. You guys do like, do you guys do feeding therapy? Do you guys do some feeding in your...
We do. It's not like a consistent schedule like you would do, like
specific. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was going to say, in the past, I've worked with kiddos who came in specifically for feeding, which is one of the reasons why I asked you what your favorite course was, because I was like, I wonder if she has a good one that I can look into. But
The Marsha Dunkline. I took that one too, and I loved hers.
Which one?
The Marsha Dunkline one. Get permission.
Oh, okay.
That one's really good.
What your favorite tools are when working with kids with picky eating?
I feel like that is such a wide range because I work with so many kids from little to big. It's just a lot of tools.
You can give us a couple of your favorites. Yeah.
I guess like just your body and making a mess and your hands to your mouth and the whole like sensory experience is definitely the best tool. Positive experiences mixed with sensory experiences is definitely the overarching theme here. Somebody asked me the other day what my favorite like utensils were, but she lived in a different country. So we were trying to get her the resources. So she's like, oh, I don't have that. I was like, well, you should just use your hands. Like, does your baby use his hands, Steve? Because that'd be really helpful. Make a mess, bring it to your mouth. Like that will do. Use your finger. I love the chewy tubes for babies because I feel like it just gets that jaw strength good. And if they have teeth, it helps. But really what I use for all my babies is I stick my finger in their mouth and I kind of help them do it. So really, you don't need a whole lot of resources.
You know what's great is all of that is free.
Yes. And that is also amazing.
No, and it's there.
It's right there right now. So if you're like, oh, I want to go work on that, it's like, well, great. You have a finger, put it in your child's mouth, start now. Then if you want to buy a tool, you can buy it also.
That's funny. Cause one of the things that I've started working on with my kiddo is like desensitizing, you know, like he already has like a strong gag reflex and he's like 4 weeks old. He'll yawn and he'll gag. And so I'm like, sticking my finger in his mouth and his cheeks and just like trying to get in there already to just prepare him. Like, you're going to have stuff in your mouth, buddy. You need to get used to it.
Yeah, right? You will mouth everything.
A little bit of a going the other direction with like the messy play and playing with your food. What about those parents who struggle to allow their children to play with their food and allow them to get messy, and the parents don't want to have that mess?
Yeah. So we just talked about this also. First of all, I actually identified with the parent and I said, hey, okay, so you don't like getting messy. So we need to like address that fact right now, because if you don't understand that it's bothering you, that's going to make it harder and more stressful for you. So there are tools that you can get, you know, you can get those bibs that go all around to your arms or whatever. If you need to, if you're not making any mess, that's better than nothing. But I always tell kids or tell parents, strip them down to their diaper, embrace the mess, get the hand to the mouth, do the play, get them all in messy. It's okay. You don't have to do it every meal, but the more you do it, the better. And schedule bath time right after, or put them in your sink, or have a cleanup plan. if you can be organized with the mess, then the mess feels less overwhelming if you know it's coming. So I kind of prep them to do it. You can get like the spill mats, or I'll have people go outside. I'll be like, why don't you just go outside and do this? Or I use the bathtub a lot. I'm like, you're going to go in the bathtub and you're going to play with yogurt and it's going to be okay. And then you're going to wash them off and life will go on. And so I feel like there's that layer of saying like, they have to do it. Listen to me here, because it becomes a point where the child's actually not progressing because they worried so much about the mess. And it's not their fault, but they just need to do differently from now on because they do know now. And so we need to find a way to work around it. So that is how I deal with it. In older kids, I do go outside, like go outside and do it, or go to a tiled floor, or get really messy with me if you're seeing me weekly or something, which doesn't happen as much anymore. But when I work with older kids, I would. And I'd be like, we're just going to go all in. And then you pick like a day or two and just go all in.
Yeah. I think so much of it too is, you know, sensory is genetic. And so oftentimes, you know, if the parents are feeling uncomfortable by this tactile experience and the kids are too, so we do need to address it with the parents and say, look, we probably have some sensory things going on too. Let's work through these. And you know, you can laugh about it. I always laugh about it with my clients.
Sure.
But I think that it's very eye-opening when the parents are like, oh, yeah, that is an issue. Like, I don't like getting messy. So no wonder my kid doesn't like getting messy either.
Yeah. So. And usually when they see them taking off by getting messy, or, oh, that wasn't so bad. And they kind of know, because I over prep them, because if you come into my session, I am going to be like covered in baby food and they're going to be messy. And the next time they will bring in an extra set of clothes because they like know. So I'm like over prepping them. Like, this is going to be super messy. It's not going to be kind of messy. It's going to be really messy. And so you better get on board. And they're like, okay, well, it works. So we'll keep doing it. And like, now we like to get messy. It's okay. Whatever. So they usually come around and I don't really hear anything else about it unless they just don't tell me, because they know I'm obsessed with making messes. But
I have a side note. I was just thinking about how modern day foods are meant to be, well, they're being made to be eaten on the go, right?
Right.
So I think about those pouches.
Oh yeah.
What are
the applesauce pouches?
On the pouches.
Oh, I make parents dump them out. It's a huge sensory surprise. I have sensory kids and they won't, you know, they won't touch anything. So they just like suck down the pouch. But like every pouch, only suck down like one pouch, because it has to be the same color and the same shape and everything. Because if like the package changes, the inside changes to them. And then the packages like change every year or so, you know, like they change different brand, you know, different packaging just for marketing purposes. And then they can't eat them any longer and all the things. So if you're just eating pouches, you will dump them out and play with them during my session. And they can have the pouch if they know what's inside, or if it's a comfortable pouch. Every once in a while on the go, I get it. It's fine, but I always encourage to dump it out.
Yeah, I think it's important too. And I just, you know, it's just one of those things that has changed over the years, and they make it easy for parents, but not easy for the sensory system. Mm-hmm. They don't think about this when they're designing these products.
They don't care.
Stuff like that.
And also in our culture, because I had a kiddo come in earlier this week, and they were from the Congo, and I was giving granola bars and stuff, and she's like, well, what are you, like, what is this? She didn't even like know what it was. And I was like, what do you guys like take? Do you have like snacks? And she's like, no, we don't have snacks. And she's like, we eat like this, this, and this. And I'm like, oh, you just do like dishes. And she's like, yeah. I was like, do you have like grab and go options? And she was like, looked at me like I was crazy. So, you know, like, I feel like culturally, a lot of people probably, or a lot of places don't have quite as many. I mean, that's a very dramatic comparison, but
It's so true.
I thought that was super interesting too, since we think about the foods they're eating and the experiences they're having. They are a lot different than here. We are making everything more convenient, which is not helping.
Yeah.
It's just like, we're making everything like for kids. Here's your kids' food and here it is on the go. So it's super convenient. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
That's just our lifestyles these days.
It's terrible. I don't like it.
It's eye-opening.
That is like my hugest beef on like the puffs, you know, like puffs and the Gerber like Cheeto things. They're like two of the worst baby food products in my opinion, which is for the run. I'm actually fine with saying it. Because all my kids, I'm just going there. All my kids put them at midline because they prefer to be here because the breast went here, the bottle went here, everything went here, right? So they pick up the pop, they put it in the middle of their tongue, it starts to melt to it, and then they gag. And this gag pattern happens like forever. And this is like the most marketed baby food, right?
Yeah.
And then the baby mom, same thing, goes also sit midline on your tongue and they suck them and then they swallow a piece down too much, which also leads to gagging. So the babies don't have that separation of the sides of their mouth, which develops their chew and all that. So that is a big problem because we're marketing these prepackaged baby foods. So every eval that comes into my session with those things, I can quickly be like, here, have like a snap pea crisp. It's like the same thing, but it's longer and it goes out of midline. Like, try that. And they're like, well, it's not a baby food. And I'm like, who cares? Like, you need something else. Like, we need to get out of the baby food realm sometimes because it's kind of hindering some of those kids. And it happens once a week, at least in my practice, that a family comes in with gagging and difficulty starting solids. And it's because they have no lateralization or separation of the sides. They're just midline gagging on puffs.
That's so interesting.
So that's interesting, but soapbox, that's my soapbox.
No, that's so interesting. No, I want to know more.
I know. I was like, keep talking these things.
For sure. It's crazy, but it's hard because they're like, well, that's what I was told to give my baby. That's what is marketed towards my baby. But in my experience, that's not always helpful. I mean, they can be helpful, but the pups are helpful if they're put on the jaw or the black molar area, and then you teach the baby to chew. But who knows to do that? Nobody. They just give the pup to the baby. Like, here you go. You're 6 to 9 months, I think it is, or something, and here is your pup, and they hear.
And the puffs dissolve anyway, so they don't have to chew them.
No, yeah, for sure. They just kind of melt there. And they have, like, no sensory value either, so they're just, like, a dry, you know, all the things.
Well, no sensory value, but there's also really no nutritional value in them.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Yeah.
It's like a Dorito.
But with less sensory value.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it makes a good, like, if you have a thin puree and you add a puff to it, it gives it some texture. That's about it.
Let's take a quick break and talk about the sponsor for today's episode, Harkla. Like we said earlier, they make high quality products, things like sensory swings, weighted blankets, lap pads, compression sheets, body socks, all the things you guys know we love.
So we had the chance to try out a few of their products, like one of their swings and weighted blankets, and they are definitely top shelf, you guys. Their products are great. And yeah, you can go buy a sensory swing on Amazon, but when you purchase it from Harkla, you know where your money is going.
If you're a therapist looking for new products, if you're a parent and you need some new equipment for your kiddo, whoever you are, you guys have to check these guys out ASAP.
Okay, we're going to get back to the episode, but stay tuned because at the end of the episode, we're going to give you a code for a discount with these guys.
I want to know another soapbox. I want another one.
That's my biggest soapbox. Also sensory, just the sensory part of the babies, you know, sitting all the time. And I feel like they sit and then the family's like, oh, sweet, they're sitting. And I feel like I'm guilty of this. And that's why I notice it more, I think, because like, oh, my kid sits, like, this is perfect. But I see a lot of babies with like GI discomfort and stuff. And they sit here and they protect here and they stay here in the sitting position that they never really reach out of midline. And then they put that puff in and they've never gone out of midline also with their body. So then they super gag on it. So then we have to work on that physical occupational therapy side and work on those gross motor milestones to meet the feeding milestones. So that would be my other one.
So then you're not a fan of containers.
No, I'm not a fan of containers. I like the rolling and playing all over the floor like the good old days, for sure. I'm that person too. I hear you.
I'm curious what a treatment session with you would look like. So you go in, you get your kiddo, and do you start with movement and more of that gross motor, like warming up the body activities?
When I worked with older kids, yes. And I do occasionally, now I really do baby to starting solids. And with them, I still do movement. I'll put the baby in prone and get some like postural stability and stuff in with them. I try to do some sensory movements and stuff. However, I don't have as good of sensory involvement in this job as I did in my previous one. So I feel like sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish I had better like actual things to do with this infant, but I'm getting there. Like I'm starting to learn more and reach out to different people. But having all of those options and movement-based activities and just bringing it to the parents' attention, what milestones did they last reach? What are you working on next? How does their crawl look? Because that affects, are they sitting? What about transitioning? I'll often refer to PT or have a PT pop in just to see, hey, how are they moving and what looks funky to you? Especially because a lot of my kids are more medically involved. But with my older kiddos, we would go, we had a sensory room and all the things. So we would do sensory play or like a little obstacle course or something and then come up for sure. Or just the movement within the room. Mm-hmm. So yes, I do like that. I love your podcast for different ideas for sure. I feel like I was listening to it before and have like incorporated some of those things, you know, the crab walks and animal walks, the things. The music and movement is fun for babies and sometimes they'll touch their face and, you know, like that kind of stuff. But yeah, then we just explore, make a mess. Mm-hmm. Depending on the age, it looks different, but all of it is very messy.
Love it. Do you guys do anything with like oral motor exercises or anything like that?
Some with the baby, it's just working on the chew and tongue lateralization and those early skills that kind of work in order. I'm a very functional oral motor person, so I do most of my oral motor through foods. I'll give them various textures and different things and see how they process those and how they move them around in their mouth versus actually making them do an oral motor exercise or exam, because none of my kids that I've ever worked with have been like, sweet, let's do oral motor.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a place for it and I'm starting to learn more about it. And I'm thinking like, wow, I could have done a little bit more of that, but I've always been trained by OTs. I've always been PT OT. I don't have as much oral motor stuff that I always do because it's always been so hard with my kids. It's more like oral motor for a sensory seeker. I've never had kids with great attention or that are really going to sit there and do anything specific for me. It's all play-based and randomly moved into my session or based on like different textures and foods that I give them to try to upgrade them for sure.
Yeah. More functional than sitting and doing an exercise with your tongue 10 times, right?
Yes. Yes. And I can try to do it, but I find that even if I try with a lot of my kids, they just don't have the attention or interest in doing that. So sometimes with like a really motivating activity, yes, but
sure. Yeah. It's a good point.
There's a place for it for sure. Yeah. And some people are probably better with it. And on babies, you can do a little bit more because you just kind of go in their mouth and see how they're doing in there and just desensitize and all those things. But
mm-hmm. Totally.
Once they get a little bit older, a lot of my kids have oral aversion and stuff, so they don't really want to do that.
So then what do you do for those kiddos who are like, you try to touch their face or get messy and they're like, no way, no way?
Oh, we work on it. We do like kisses or, you know, we blow kisses or mom and dad give them kisses. I'll have them do like some infant massage stuff and get on their face and do their stretches before their bed or before bedtime or when they're tired or before they feed and work that into their schedule more. Just really positive experiences around the face or any toys or anything up to their face.
But incorporating it into the routine is the trick.
That is definitely, if you can get a parent on board and they understand where you're coming from, then yes, absolutely. The more they do it, the better.
Yeah. Okay.
It's about trust too. So my kids won't let me do it, or they often won't let the parent do it for a while. They'll let me do it first because I've met them a couple times and we have this trust that I'm not doing anything that they're uncomfortable with. So they start to kind of ease up and let me get a little bit further, I notice. But I try to convince the parents, you have to let it go. But it's a really hard place for a parent to be with a kid who doesn't eat because they have to get them fed and the doctors are on them or people are just wanting to make sure their weight gain is good. So somebody often still has to be a driving force in that trustful relationship or lack thereof for the calories. So then I sometimes like to say like, okay, dad is in charge of doing the oral play and stuff. And mom, you might just have to do this for a while until we can get it figured out. But I want you to do the bedtime routine away from the food or whatever, just in case. But that's a more extreme case, I would say.
Oh my gosh.
Makes sense.
What would you say is the biggest challenge right now with what you do?
The biggest challenge from this place to the last place I had way more occupational therapists on my team. This place I didn't have any for a while that were as interested, I guess, in like sensory processing stuff as much as me. We recently got a couple therapists and they're doing more trainings and things like that. But I moved from Madison, Wisconsin also to Iowa, which I feel like was just a different town. Also, you know, like they had just different opinions. So moving there, it doesn't seem like it's super far away in the Midwest, but just the things that are going on are a lot different. For example, we had like way more ABA clinics and kids on the spectrum were getting different services than they do in Iowa, just based on the different states. So I think just that Iowa is a little bit slower on some of those things. And that's obvious to me being from somewhere that was more on top of things. So working through that is a challenge that I have, but it's definitely getting better as time goes on. But right away when I started, I was like, oh my gosh, what am I supposed to do with this? How come nobody's on board with my thought process here? But it's coming along. So
interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And I'll have other really great, you know, great things, but it's just a different thought. I don't know. It's weird.
You're out of your comfort zone.
What?
You're out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, I guess. Fair.
All right. What is one piece of advice that you can give to parents and one piece of advice that you can give to other therapists?
Okay. I would say to parents that positive experiences with food, I've talked about it so much, but it's so important. And that was exactly what helped my son, was just developing more of those and learning to just have this overarching good experience with food and fun times and different things that he could kind of put in his toolbox. And other kids, I mean, it works across the board, even in the babies. We were talking about just like making a mess and how that was fun. But think about the fact that they're making a mess, but also the parents sitting across from them and watching them do this tactile bin where they're digging for things. And he might not love putting his fingers in the tactile bin, but you're sitting there across from him and cheering him on and putting his favorite toys in there. You're giving him so much attention and positive feedback. So then this whole sensory experience, overcoming that tactile fear that this child particularly didn't love, is also this positive experience. And now, because he's having so much fun with the mom doing all this and getting all this reinforcement. So even as babies, I feel like it's so important to just have those positive experiences. Let baby be in charge. Let baby kind of make a mess and do that. So for parents, that's my total goal with them for kids. For professionals, I would say to have fun, but always keep learning. I always learn so much, and every setting has been different. I learned so much coming to my second job from my first job. I was a feeding therapist the whole time, but I'm a way different feeding therapist. I had to learn everything all over again. Children with medical complex needs need a whole different therapy. Babies need a whole different therapy. Toddlers need a whole different therapy. So always keep learning, because I keep learning things every day. I still don't know all the things that I could know by any means. And I've been doing it for 10 years solely. So there's just a lot of stuff to think about. So
I love that though. That's what keeps all of us going. And that's what helps us to not get burned out, is we keep learning new things.
Yeah. Yeah. Super interesting. And it always is helpful. I hate having a kid that I can't fix, or I don't have like a plan for. You know, I hate feeling stuck. So yeah. I will just go and go and go and go, so I don't have that feeling, because it's just really hard to be stuck. It's hard to hear a family in really serious need that needs you and you can't help them. You know, I can always do something, but I always feel like, oh, but there's something else. I could have maybe done a little bit more for certain families. So That's kind of the drive, I think.
So how can people connect with you, get in touch with you?
Learn from you.
All the things. I have an Instagram account. Right now I am a working mom and have two kids and my life is a little bit hectic. I have dreams to have like an actual website or something else, but I did just open up. I have done a couple group sessions with families, just teaching your baby to chew, or starting solids is pretty, that's one of the ones that I'm going to be doing, or teaching baby to cup or straw drink, just some very basic skills where we can get on together, I can teach you this basic skill the same way I teach it to everybody else. You can learn from it, and then you can ask a couple questions and go practice. And those kind of stem from that tough mentality of it's not really that hard for some families. Some families only need me to tell them, try a snappy crisp instead of a puff and see how that changes the way your baby does food. That's kind of easy to me. So I feel like if I can make a difference to some of those families through an easy 20-minute group or something, then that would be helpful. Also, I have been doing parent coaching sessions. I can't offer telehealth through my licensure state to state, but I do love to answer questions and triage for family members. And that's been really successful. We just kind of meet for 30 to 45 minutes. They give me some concerns. They give me a little bit of a heads up on where their child's at. And I just give them some easy tips, such as try messy play, work on your chew, et cetera, based on the child. And then also recommendations such as, why don't you seek out your pediatrician? Why don't you try some PT? What about OT? If this doesn't resolve in this amount of time, seek other help. So just to kind of get them started, especially during COVID, I feel like a lot of parents are reaching out to me constantly. I need help with this. What about this? When is this a concern? So just trying to triage a little bit of that also. But right now, Instagram, that's where you can find me. Make it easy.
Yes.
Good. I'm glad you guys had me. I have literally been listening to your podcast. I actually sought out your podcast when I was first stuck in my new job and I didn't have any OTs anymore. And I was like, I need to find an OT on Instagram. And your account was the first one that I saw. And I found that and I just started listening to it randomly. And it was like just enough OT that I needed to kind of work my stuff out. So thank you.
Awesome.
I'm super honored when you asked me to be on. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting.
Love it. I'm glad you came.
You guys are doing awesome things too. You have fans out there, so keep doing what you're doing.
Before we go, do you have any questions for us?
Oh, I wanted to know with your kids, what's like your go-to sensory prep activity for a baby? For a baby, actually, I kind of want to know babies because I always work with babies. What's like the number one thing that I should do with all my babies that have maybe a NICU background that really don't have any sensory input?
I would say therapy ball. Get them on a therapy ball.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. If they, you know, you put them on their stomach on the therapy ball, on their back, you sit on the therapy ball and they're on your lap. I think just a therapy ball, you can do so many things with it and get them so much different input.
Yeah. For sure. I have been passing out therapy balls as my baby registry gift.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
I have gotten some really weird looks, but I'm like, no, this is great. You just do it.
Everybody needs one.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So thank you for that idea. It was an amazing idea and also perfect. Okay. Can you like do any wrong with it? Is it because you can do like too much, right?
Yes.
So is there any caution that you would give a family? You know what I mean?
I think
if a family was using it as a tip,
I would just try to read the child's body language, you know, just do a little bit at a time and then gradually increase. And then, you know, if it's a young baby and they're crawling, I would have them do like some sort of heavy work, like crawling afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So like getting the compression and the stretching of their joints, you know, following up that, because it's vestibular input is what we're giving them on the therapy ball. So follow that up with just a little bit of heavy work, whether they're just crawling or you're rolling the ball on their back or they're, you know, kicking it with their legs, something like that.
And I like that you brought up, you know, read their body language. So especially if the child is going upside down over the ball and getting that intense vestibular input from the inversion, to really watch their face. And just keep an eye out for any facial expression changes, color changes, changes in their eyes, to notice when it's too much.
Right. Okay.
And like Rachel said, like, they're not small.
Right. Perfect. Like I do with feeding, but the same with reading that, like reading the cues for bottling or pacifier, but the same is all the same for that vestibular movement too. Got it.
Cool.
Thanks.
Perfect. Those are good questions.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for talking with us. And
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's it.
Cool.
Great. Awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks so much.
All right, so you probably love her. We love her. It was a great conversation. Make sure you go follow her on Instagram. And then you can also check out all of the different like coaching and classes that she has available for you to try if you're in need of it.
Yes, and you guys, we would so appreciate it if you took a minute to leave us a review on iTunes. We are so close to that 500,000 download mark. Help us get there by sharing a review, tagging us on Instagram when you're listening at the Sensory Project Show. And we cannot wait to hear your thoughts about this episode.
All right, you guys, thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
All right, you guys, one last reminder. This episode was sponsored by Harkla, our newest favorite sensory product company. With less opportunity for movement in today's virtual world, and with how much we love obstacle courses, this company is the perfect place to shop for equipment to set up bomb obstacle courses.
Okay, so if you're unfamiliar with obstacle courses, let's give you an example. You can use Harkla's indoor therapy swing, and your child can swing on their stomach to gather an item such as a puzzle piece, then climb out and jump across a pillow bridge while in their Harkla sensory body sock and place their puzzle piece on the board, then do a wheelbarrow walk. Super simple, super fun, and so many benefits.
So if you guys are ready to check them out, go to harkla.co, that's harkla.co. /sensory, SENSORY, and you can save 10% on any of their products by using the code SENSORY.
We will link this in the show notes in case it's easier for you to have it in writing, and that's it.
We are so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life. Just a friendly reminder, this is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, and sensory integration. We do not know you or your child, therefore we do not know any specific needs. Therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist for more information.